Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Deutsche Konsum REIT-AG preliminary results for the fiscal year 2017-2018 telephone conference. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Rolf Elgeti, CFO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this conference call about Deutsche Konsum's annual figures for the fiscal year ending September 2018. In case you haven't seen it yet, there is an updated presentation on our website, deutsche-konsum.de, where I would like to use one or two slides from it just briefly, and I suggest, as per usual, I just spend 10 or 15 minutes going through the key highlights, and then we have plenty of time to go through any questions. I'll start on page number four, where we put together the key achievements of the last fiscal year. Some of it just summarize the numbers. We're now at 103, so 103 properties, generating annualized rents of nearly 40 million euros. That's a growth of 28 assets over the fiscal year, and an acquisition volume of 127 million, which I'd like to stress because we were always guiding around the 100 million euro mark. The good news is that we found more properties than we wanted and needed, and of course, still at the valuation levels that are extremely accretive. I'll come to that later. What we have got has performed extremely well. We have reduced the vacancy by one-third, approximately to under 10%, of course, mainly driven by the restructuring of our Greifswald asset, and we have increased the WALT, the weighted average lease term, over the fiscal year by over 10% to over 5 years, which of course is key because if one doesn't do anything over a year, then the WALT would go down by 1 year precisely. The fact that it went up shows you that we have managed to overcompensate the lease expiry so that these assets are indeed sustainable in terms of their tenant usage. We have issued an investment-grade bond, duration 6 years, coupon 1.8%. You know that, but I'd just like to stress that Deutsche Konsum, in its now 3rd years, has managed to, I guess, catch up with the peer group in terms of cost of debt, which is now at around the 1.7% mark, which I think is not too bad at all. Of course, that also leads to a very, I guess, safe and comfortable interest cover ratio of almost 4 times based on EBITDA, which shows the solvency and the balance sheet strength and the credit quality and the low risk of Deutsche Konsum. We've managed to do all this growth with only 1 10% capital increase last December, which is good. Our FFO has grown by over 61% to 16.5 million for the year, leading to a dividend that we will suggest to the AGM of 0.20 per share. What you don't see on page four, but later on, is that we are guiding for a dividend of 0.40 for the current fiscal year. On page five, you can see some of those numbers in more detail. I don't want to repeat everything here, but just the key thing to highlight is that the rental income has grown by 52%, but more crucially, our FFO has grown by more than 52%, so 61%, and also the percentage of rental income as a percentage of rents received, of course, has also grown. That becomes 2 layers operationally and within the whole company. The profitability of Deutsche Konsum has improved. As a result, and since we have financed all this growth with only 1 10% capital increase, logically, the FFO per share has gone up very significantly. The FFO in total went up by 61%, but on a per share basis by 35%. That's very significant and shows that we're not just growing for the sake of it, but that it's very accretive on the one hand, but on the other hand, also very attractive from a total return per share point of view. I'll just give a few slides that summarize what I've just said. On page 8 and 9, you see a current overview of our portfolio, of how it looks on the map and some photos. All of that self-explanatory. I don't think we need to go through that. On page 10 and 11, you see some of the last acquisitions. Again, we don't need to go through them individually, but it's just to highlight, as you can see here, we are still buying the same product at more or less the same valuations, the same yields, with the same tenants, so the same risk. Just to say that in a market environment that is, I guess, dominated by headlines in the press of how difficult it is to buy properties, we are still managing to do that. And in fact, we've bought more this year than last year, which is extremely reassuring, because of course, when you buy at a 10% yield and have cost of debt below 2%, it's very difficult to go to straight insolvency. So it's an extremely lucrative and accretive growth that we can show here. On the pages 12 and also 13, you get some more updated detail on our tenant mix, and the key is still the same. We have very much food anchored markets. You see the key exposures here. All of these are very high credit quality names. So that's reassuring on two levels. One is that the individual groups, as you can see on page 12, are high credit quality names. But two, sort of by usage and by the nature of the products, it's extremely defensive. It's non-cyclical. And these are businesses that that are growing. On page 13 on the left side, you see my personal favorite chart, which is just counting the number of tenants we've got. And it shows you how, you know, how many of the same we've got. So for instance, we now have 7 Normas, 6 Aldis, et cetera. The key point of this chart is just to show the key investment thesis of Deutsche Konsum, which is basically that we want to have the same tenant again and again in the various locations, and thereby changing the relationship from the landlord that typically can be taken as a hostage by the tenants to a more kind of even relationship where we cooperate with the tenant. And of course, that is already working. We are, in many cases, we are a preferred and liked partner by our tenants. That means that we have a more even symmetric information flow, or in plain English, the tenants have no longer incentives to lie to us. And that means that we can work together with them to develop new locations, to develop our relationships, to have a fair CapEx program, and also to acquire new properties at quite favorable conditions. And you can see on the right-hand side of page 13 that the lease length, where it's distributed by years, that looks pretty conservative. Not much is expiring other than the usual noise. Most of that is in 6 years and plus, but also we have got some turnover, so we can work with the portfolio. So that is how you would like this chart to look. Again, all of these points underlying kind of the low-risk nature of Deutsche Konsum. On page 14, you can see that we're not just low-risk, but also low-valuation. You have our usual sensitivity table that compares various scenarios on a hypothetical NAV per share with the implied yield. And you can see that at the current level where the shares are trading, we are looking at an implied yield unlevered of about 7.4%. Our value of the portfolio at 8.5, which is why the NAV per share is currently at 7.67. But the current equity valuation, so take the market cap, add the debt and relate this to the rent in place, that leads to a 7.4% yield, which I think can be considered as quite low. Let's talk about the liability side of the balance sheet. Very briefly, two charts on page 16 and 17 worth highlighting. First, you see how our cost of debt has moved post the various refinancings. You can see the refinancing mix on the top right side of page 16. They can see that we have our corporate bond at 1.8%, We have the two convertibles where we reduced the coupon massively, as I'm sure you've seen in the press release. And then we have various banks, amongst others. The S is basically is the German Sparkassen, the savings and loans. That's not one bank, but it's quite a few. And so you can see it's quite spread out in terms of where the debt comes from. And also below, you can see the debt maturity is reasonably spread out as well. So that looks extremely good. And on page 17, you can see the quarter-by-quarter development of some of the key debt variables. So first, you see that the LTV is now at approximately 50%. That's also our target, so that's good. The average interest, as you can see, has come down quite significantly now to below 2 years. Our average duration has gone up, and our ICR is now almost 4 times, which of course is quite conservative. Then you can see that the various numbers, the numbers are the numbers. I don't want to go through that. We can take any questions on them because they're pretty much self-explanatory. You will have seen that in the presentation we have included a new section at the end explaining our strategy a little bit more. Maybe I just highlight one or two slides of that very briefly. Not, of course, before just having mentioned again that we're guiding for a dividend of 40 cents for the current year. It's the pages 32 and following where we make a number of points on our strategy, and I just like to repeat this extremely briefly. First, it's what we do, of course, it's worth reminding, is that we buy individual assets that are small, they're illiquid, and they may individually be risky because they depend upon these extensions. But of course, and none of these would be something that institutional investors would buy individually because they're too complicated and too small. But of course, by combining them and by benefiting from the effects of having the same tenants again and again, and by putting them into a prime standard listed REIT with all the corporate governance implications of that and the tax exemptions and et cetera, we transform this asset class in something that any institutional investor anywhere in the world can justify buying, which effectively is not a big transformation, but that's also kind of a transmission. It's effectively a transmission of lower cost of capital to an asset class that otherwise would have higher cost of capital, and that, of course, creates value. We have also included a small section afterwards just to go through the question that usually comes up, like how much are we threatened by e-commerce? We always said that we are not really threatened by that, and you can see some numbers, current market intelligence, on how our retailers are doing and how that compares to the more cyclical stuff, like electronics, fashion, etc. And you can see that our tenants actually have significant rental volume growth, sales growth of way above inflation, actually. And that's very reassuring and, of course, underlining our strategy. So that's new. New in the presentation, otherwise, of course, not new. And I'd like to stop here and take any questions.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. We received our first question from Mr. Kai Klose, Berenberg. Your line is now open.
Very good morning, Berenberg. Two questions, if I may. The first one is on page 22 of the presentation. First, you could maybe give us a split, a more detailed split of the 2.2 billion runoffs in the FFO calculation. Secondly, the AFFO improved not as strongly as the FFO because of the higher capex. Could you give an indication? indication what you expect to spend as CapEx for the current fiscal year. Then third question would be on the gearing level here on page 16. We now have a loan to value of 51%. Just to get a feeling if you feel comfortable with these levels, or would you like to increase, if you like to increase or decrease the LTV? And then two last questions. When we look into the lease expiry schedule for the portfolio on page 13, what are your expectations for the expiries in the current fiscal year? Are there any larger expiries where you don't expect the leases to be extended? That would be my first question for now. Thank you.
Okay. I'll start with the easy ones and let Christian, our CFO, answer the first one on the one-offs. Maybe going backwards, on the lease expiries, no, there's nothing where we are worried. In fact, I'd like to take this opportunity to say that so far we have extended every single lease. Since the inception of the company, we have extended every lease that we needed to, which is every lease, and we had not had a property where the vacancy has gone up. So vacancy has gone down or stayed flat, and tenants have not vacated our buildings yet, and we don't expect that to happen. So there's nothing that seems risky for us, and there's also nothing that where we've priced in that people would leave. So that's at least currently simply nothing there what we expect on the downside. On the LTV,
if I may jump in very quickly when it comes to the expiries, your expectations regarding the lease rent levels, is it right to say that it will broadly be kept, so we will not see a significant like-for-like rental growth, so it will be more focused on, extending the lease, the vault, rather than the rent levels?
Yes and no. I mean, we haven't published like-for-like rental numbers yet because it's difficult to really report this yet. We'll probably do this as of the next quarter. But basically what happens upon the rent renewals, so far the weighted average like-for-like rental growth for sort of tenants that stay on space that we've had before, so like-for-like in the strictest sense of the word, that rental growth is approximately 60 basis points. So it's not huge, but it's positive. I guess most people expect it to be negative, but it's positive. And it's less than inflation. Of course, most of the rents are also inflation linked. But just upon the rent renewals, there's a mild average uptake of 60 basis points per annum. So that's for all the rents. So it's not the ones that have been extended, but it's the rental growth from extensions, but relative to the entire rent. So the average rental growth, of course, will be higher, but the like-for-like rental growth from extensions is 60 basis points. I don't know if that made sense now what I said. But then we have another 60 basis points basically from vacancy reduction. And then there's another effect that we haven't measured yet, which is why we don't publish the numbers yet, which is what's the rental growth from kind of changing tenants. So kick out tenant A, take new tenant B. That number will be high, but it's also associated with CapEx. So that's difficult to measure. To answer your question, there is mild rental growth in the lease extensions of approximately 60 basis points. Then the LTV at about 51%. Our official target is 50%, and whether it's 49 or 51, I don't think makes any difference. So we are exactly comfortable with the current level of the loan to value. And on the AFFO, you're right, that hasn't grown by as much. And the CapEx is driven by almost 5 million from the Greifswald redevelopment, revitalization effectively. So that is like a one-off CapEx. We have some more kind of repositioning projects in the pipeline. It's difficult to forecast when and how expensive they will be. But it's extremely likely that the CapEx number will be lower in the current fiscal year than in the last year, so that the AFFO should grow more significantly than the FFO by simply catching up from this one-off effect. But it's a bit difficult to say, because if something interesting happens and it makes sense to do the CapEx, then we will do it. But the way it looks right now, the CapEx number will be lower than last year. And Christian, on the one-offs.
Hello, good morning also from my side. So Kai, regarding your questions to the one-offs, so there are a few or several effects. So the biggest one is actually, so you know, we had this refinancing project within the last financial year. And for that, we also had to pay a few upfronts and also the entries of the mortgages into the land registers and so on. And in total, we have refinanced around 90 million euros. So for that, we had a few fees we had to pay. So, and we have adjusted them from the FFO because it's not recurring. Another effect is a simple
Could you maybe specify that? How much was on the refinancing and bond issuance?
We have taken new loans of around 100 million. So, and we had to do mortgages, enter this into the register of land and so on. And for all that, you have to pay fees, and these are not recurring. So we have adjusted them here.
And that was how much of the 2.2 million?
This was in total around 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Another effect of 0.6 million euros is a simple valuation effect because of the IFRS accounting regarding the convertible bonds. So we have to capitalize them every quarter to reach the nominal value at the end of the convertible. And that's a simple valuation effect. This is also a non-cash effect. That's why we adjusted it here from the FFO. Then we had a few non-periodic expenses and other things, and they total up to 0.6 million as well.
Okay, many thanks. And may I have the very last question? When you're looking to your acquisition pipeline, what kind of properties are included there? I'm just asking because the exposure to the non-cyclical winds are now at 68%, slightly down compared to 9 months when it was 70%. Maybe could give us just a heads up how do you see the acquisition pipeline and what kind of exposure in terms of tenants you would like to have and how the pipeline looks like?
The short answer to that is more of the same. I think if that the that we went from 70 to 68% in the non-cyclicals, I think that was simply coincidence, probably driven by the one media market that was included in the last round of purchases. That should oscillate still around the 70% level. So we're buying the same product, the same size, the same tenants, the same structures. I think the only thing is maybe regionally we would expect to have a little bit more in the west rather than the east, but even that is difficult to forecast. But there's no trend in any variable whatsoever with regards to the acquisition pipeline relative to what we've got.
Great, thanks for the update.
We received our next question from Mr. Georg Kanders, Bankhaus Lampe. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good morning from Wisloff. I have a question regarding the revitalization projects. How much increase in rents are you expecting from the four larger projects you have here? And what are potential candidates for further redevelopment?
Okay. Bear with me 2 seconds. Just looking at the page. Let's go through that. I think in Greifswald we are likely to increase the rent by about 600,000 euros. In Hohenmühlen, we're talking of about 450,000 euros. In the Columbus Passage in Rostock, it will probably be only 150,000 euros. However, with a much longer lease term on average. And in Stralsund, it's a bit early to say because we have got two key options here. One is we go for the high cost, high quality version, and the other one is the low to no cost version that would lead to longer leases, but not necessarily higher quality tenants. We're not quite sure ourselves yet, and B, we're also still in talks with the city of Stralsund, what would actually work sort of building permit wise, because for the high quality option, we would need a new building permit, to which they're open to, but for the low quality version, we don't need a new building permit. So that's too early to say.
Regarding Greifswald, is it the full effect for the current fiscal year, or has there already been something in the last fiscal year?
There will have been something in the last, but it's tiny. I mean, the works are almost finished. The kind of contract-wise, the vacancy is literally zero. I mean, almost zero. But of course, not everyone has had the handover of their space yet. So our fiscal year has started 6 weeks ago, so some of the rents might only start kind of clipping in January or February. So we will not see the full effect of this in the current fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And are there now other candidates you have currently?
Yeah, well, there's one in the... the Huff Center in Ueckermünde is another one that we're looking at, but there we haven't made very detailed plans yet. There's also the two Kauflands in Saxony that we bought about 7-8 months ago, where we're in talks with various tenants to see whether they want more space, different space, and we've got new tenants that want to move in. So there may be something bigger maybe coming there, but that will be something that we will probably fix in Q1 next year, and then we know more. But we've acquired those two properties at very high yields, deep double digits. So if we do anything there, it would be kind of a bit of a luxury problem in that it would be even better. And if that doesn't work out, then it wouldn't be a problem. But the likelihood is that at least one of the two, we might do some bigger project there too.
Yeah, and regarding now that you have reached your LTV target, are you thinking about capital recycling? You mentioned the first property was sold in Berlin, a smaller one. Are you also thinking about larger ones to be sold?
Yes, we're thinking about it. We have sold this small property in Berlin at 18 times rent, so at a 5.5% yield. It was interesting. It was just the fact that the lease was extended and it could be sold at that sort of multiple. We're currently going through the portfolio to select one, two, or three possible centers and maybe bundle them into a portfolio and maybe do a test balloon to see how the market reacts, because one is the kind of lease length effect and the other one is the size effect. So we're currently thinking about how exactly we should do it and how strong the market is for those assets, and possibly we might recycle more. I really don't want to promise that. I just want to say that we are thinking about it. We like the idea of capital recycling. We think it's very sensible. We're looking at it. That option may be there. We don't need the option, but if it's there, we will use it. But I don't want to promise it. It's too early to say.
Yeah, thank you.
Our next question is from Mr. Thomas Effler, ODDO BHF. Your line is now open.
Yeah, just a follow-up question regarding your LTV. You mentioned 51% end of September, the financial year. Considering the latest acquisitions, Do you have a figure? What is the current LTV, considering the newest acquisitions, and kind of what is the current cash position then, taking into account the acquisitions?
So, hello, Mr. Effler, this is Christian Helmut. We calculate as we have before. So we would like to refinance 50%. So we want to keep this LTV at around 50%, very stable, and that's how we plan to go on. This is also regarding the last acquisition. So no surprises here, actually.
So you need, do you need any capital increase currently? That's what I'm referring to. I mean,
no. We'll fund the acquisitions as per usual out of cash. That's not a leverage issue yet. Once we refinance that, of course the LTV will go up, but that will also increase our kind of cash position again for further acquisitions. So it's clear that we can't buy another 100 million from here without doing either capital recycling or a capital increase. Yeah. Unless we want the LTV to increase, what we don't want to. Currently we have firepower for another 20 to 25 million unlevered, so with leverage, 30 to 35 million. So we will simply take a view how the pipeline develops and how our capital recycling goes when it comes to the next capital increase.
Okay. And regarding the valuation, I mean, you mentioned it. Looking at the market, I mean, the yields are quite low. What was kind of the reason that from the valuation compared probably what was expected that the valuers were still not giving you more valuation gains?
Yeah, I mean we could have a 2-hour debate on that. Mm-hmm. I think the short version is that, well, on the one hand, the valuers have problems when we buy something at 100 to really say it's worth 150. So that is just, I think, an emotional problem. I think second, our valuer that we use from the beginning of the company is a very kind of cheap, local, in inverted commas, German valuer, and quite conservative. And I think if we were to switch to the JLLs, Cushman, CBREs of this world, then I'm sure very different numbers would come out of the process. So it's a bit of a cultural thing as well. We haven't really focused a lot on that. One could, of course, but we haven't so far. But that may be on our agenda going forward, because it's clearly a bit strange to have these yields in our books. I guess at the end of the day, I think most of our investors prefer to look at cash, dividends, FFO, and maybe the implied yield of the property portfolio rather than the NAV. But still, I agree with what you implicitly said, that's something that could look optically a bit better. But we may be working on it over the next 12 months.
No, it's a clear message. Thanks.
We received the next question from Mr. Tim Jack, private investor. Your line is now open, sir.
Thanks for taking my questions. I have three questions regarding the acquisition multiple. We are now, the last acquisitions occurred above 10x multiple, if that's a trend you see in the market. Second question is regarding the OPEX position. If you could give a split into, say, non-recoverable costs or costs that are attributable to vacancy, and as well, what's the share of the asset management cost? And the third question would be, the percentage of CapEx that are related to maintenance, meaning not related to any increase in rental payments of the renter. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your questions. In terms of the acquisition pipeline and what we've paid recently, I think if you just look at the headline numbers, then it's true that we acquired at rent multiples that were slightly above 10, whilst before we typically acquired slightly below 10. That looks like a change or like a trend, but it really isn't. What is happening here is simply that we have acquired just over that period different properties, i.e. Properties that at least in our valuation framework are simply worth more. So either with a more interesting product or more rental growth potential, sometimes even longer leases. So what we do is we value the assets asset by asset and very bottom up, and then we end up in valuation ranges of say anywhere between 8 and 12 times rent, and just depending what kind of product precisely we have sort of on our desk, the weighted average rent multiple upon acquisition will be below or above 10.
So this is pure luck.
It's luck or the contrary of it. I don't know. Whatever. Let's say mutually coincidence. You are of course right to ask the question, because what is happening clearly in the markets. Our assets, if we were to sell the entire portfolio, we would probably receive a bid of 16 times rent. Maybe 16 and a half times rent would be my estimate right now. That's the market prices have gone up. I mean, they have gone up significantly, but of course we go through billions of assets and we just buy 100 million or 127 in the case of the last fiscal year. So we are extremely picky. And I guess that leads to, I guess, slightly wider question that, should we grow more strongly and accept slightly lower yields? Because frankly, it would still be extremely accretive even to pay 10% more, or even to pay 20% more would still be very, very accretive given that our cost of debt is below 2. And our share price is implying a yield of 7.4. So if we were acquiring, say, on average at a yield of 8 or 8.5, it would still be fantastic. But we don't want to do that. I'm not sure it's right or wrong. I mean, I sometimes disagree with myself about that. But it's clear that we could afford to pay higher prices, and virtually all our competitors do. But we don't want to. We want to have a very huge buffer between the yield of the assets and our cost of debt, and we think that in the long run that will be the best for the total return on a per share basis, and we will rather kind of recycle capital rather than just go out and raise more and more capital to acquire more and more assets as fast as possible. Of course we will eventually raise more capital to buy more assets, but we are really driven by the total return per share. So long answer, you're right in what you implicitly ask, is the market getting tougher and the prices rising on the ground? There's a very clear yes to that. No, we're not giving in to this and just accepting higher prices. That's just how it looks. But the third point is that we could afford to, but we don't. I think that's what I would say to that. In terms of the CapEx question, I think the very simple answer is that all of the CapEx is related to either rent increases or vacancy reduction or lease extensions. So none of that is ongoing, because that's part of OpEx. And for the detailed question on OpEx, I'll hand over to Christian again.
Hello. Yeah, I want to give a short split about the OpEx. So the 7.4 million euros consists of 2.2 million running maintenance costs, but here you have to know that especially the new acquired assets, some of them we have taken over into our management. We have to fix a few things, and so that's what we have to do at the beginning. And second, non-recoverable costs. So these are around 3.2 million euros running costs, where we have to also make estimates regarding the new acquired assets, how much of the running cost can be charged to the tenants. And yeah, you know, at the beginning we don't have any experience about these assets, so we have to estimate, and we are very careful here. And yeah, that's why we have 3.2 million here at the end. And the third thing are management costs, like property management, asset management fees, and they sum up to around 2 million.
Thanks so much.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. As there are no further questions, I would hand back to the speakers.
Great. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for your time and your questions, everyone. Of course, if there are more questions, we are around to answer any of them. So again, thanks for your time and your interest, and your trust in us. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.